True Cult with Alex Bonniewell.
When is not cooking up another gloriously weird cult entertainment topic for ABC Re, Alex Bonniewell is busy watching new releases for you. So if you're looking for something new to watch or something to add to your cult film collection, then Alex might have just the thing that you're looking for. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Rihanna. How's it going?
It's going well. It's going well. And another bunch of new releases from you this month. And how would you describe the makeup of the six new releases that you're taking a look at?
Oh, it's from all over the world. We've got weird pregnancies, Wild West zombies, ancient Chinese legend, outer space gelatinous things, incredible Danish film, and a whole heap of short movies in a really cool anthology.
Well, first up, Alex, is this one, Antibirth.
You're pregnant.
I really can't be pregnant. This is not my stuff.
And your mind goes, wah, 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 wah,
wah. I'm just saying, if you're pregnant, you're going to have to slow it down.
If I'm pregnant, maybe I can give this kid some superpowers.
Pregnancy.
I can barely take care of myself, let alone some weird immaculate conception.
Whatever's inside of me is infecting my brain. My body.
Are you having difficulty remembering things? You feel like somebody switched the channel.
Alex, this film just looked completely warped, but what is the story with Antibirth?
This is one wigged out film. I was so looking forward to seeing this. We've got Lou, who's played by Natasha Lyonne, who's Nikki from Orange is the New Black. She's like a partying stoner who lives in the middle of nowhere in a kind of trailer shack combo place. And she just doesn't want to give up her kind of teenage years. One night after partying pretty hard, she wakes up feeling a bit dodgy and tries to piece together what happened to her that night. As the days go by and the conspiracy deepens, her stomach grows as she is now pregnant, which what seems to be an incredibly quick growing thing inside her. As Lou gets closer to giving birth, the truth starts to come forth and it gets weirder and weirder. And it's got one of the best freaked out endings I've seen in a long time. This has got like shades of Frank Henelotter all over it, the guy responsible for Basket Case, Frankenhooker, Bad Biology. He's got nothing to do with this, but the people that put it together obviously love those kind of films. It's a really nihilistic, psychedelic freak out. It's all messed up. There's messed up people, messed up situation, and a messed up conclusion. It's like, I'm so happy that people are still making stuff like this. This just reeks of 1980s exploitation cinema. You've got a main character, your hero, your heroine, and you kind of feel sorry for her, but you don't, because you know she's kind of bringing a lot of this on herself, because she just won't grow up. She won't put aside the bong and just get on with life. You know, there's nothing particularly wrong with that, but you've got to remember what you do sometimes. And yeah, and the fact that she can't remember what happened to her, and that things are going wrong, and all the people around her kind of know what's going on but won't tell her. Yeah, you're on her side, but you're kind of thinking, well, you've brought it on yourself a bit maybe. But yeah, really, really cool. If you're into the more weird side of 80s horror, then Antibirth is where you should be.
I really liked the casting for this, Alex. I thought there was some great cast members in this, and it definitely looked like a film that I wanted to see, because it kind of looked as though it was the funny horror, which sometimes breaks up just how brutal some of the scenes were in this.
There are bits that are very amusing, but yeah, it does have that undercurrent of just things aren't right. You know, you're watching it and you're just kind of going, you're saying, this isn't going to end well for anyone in this film. No one is going to get out of this and go, you never guess what. I got to the end of it and it just stopped. And I was like, wow, I really wasn't quite expecting the last 15 minutes of this film. You know, all the way up to that point, you're kind of going, yeah, this is cool, I like this. And then the last 15 minutes, it was like, wow. Yeah, they really saved everything up for that. I mean, it's pretty full on up to that point, but yeah, the last bit is just okay, I don't think I'm going to be able to watch it again for a while because I want to forget what happened and then watch it again and be surprised all over again.
Well, Alex, this next release was filmed in southeast Queensland and the makers are apparently huge admirers of Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez, and this is Bullets for the Dead.
Love. Death. Two sides of the same coin. Each always lurking just past the other. All it takes is a moment. A decision. A flick. Dead or alive.
We need to stay together. Remain aware. Become one. And then everything will be all right. Now let's get the hell out of here.
So, Alex, Bullets for the Dead, a bit of the Wild West meets zombie, but filmed in Australia.
Yeah. This is out on Monster, as is Antibirth. Yeah, it's weird because they've not got Australian accents in this, when it's quite obviously Australia. If you've watched Aussie movies, you'll recognise the landscape straight away. But they've tried to make it look Wild Westy. And the fact that it's filmed in Australia gives it a slightly surrealer edge to it. You've got a bounty hunter after a gang led by a rather fierce woman who's pretty handy with an axe. He catches up with them, decides to bring them in, ends up with a preacher taken along with them as well. And as they're making their way back to where they got to go, the zombie apocalypse starts to happen. Now, this is a nice low-budget zombie movie. It's not, the acting's not great, the script's not great. There's some nice cool ideas in this. I like zombie films, as you know, and I quite like cowboy movies, so combining the two always gets my interest. You're saying that they're fans of Tarantino and Rodriguez. That does show, now you've mentioned it, it's not the best movie out there, but it's certainly not the worst zombie movie out there. And there is one scene in particular that makes the whole film, which involves a load of zombie nuns and a covered wagon, which I don't want to explain too much, because when it happens, you just kind of go, now this has made the film for me. I'm not entirely sure if they thought of this scene first and then built the film around it, as like, this is like the punchline to the joke that they were playing all the way along, going, I can't wait till we get to the nunnery so we can do our big gag. But it's worth it. It did make what was a pretty generic but fun movie. It kind of lifted it up a couple of notches once they got to the nunnery and did all their stuff and then got out of the nunnery. Yeah, it's fun. It'll pass an hour and a half quite happily.
Made on a minuscule budget of $2 million.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no. See, I love the fact that people will make hour and a half feature-length movies on practically next to nothing. I mean, $2 million sounds like a lot of money, but for a movie, it's pennies. So, yeah, if I like low budget, I like the fact that people make low-budget movies. I kind of wish that they wouldn't shoot them on digital and have it more like a low-budget 70s or 80s movie and shoot it on film, but I know that just ramps the price up way too much. The only thing I don't like, I'm not so keen on, it's not that I don't like it, it's not so keen on low-budget movies, is that when they're shot on digital, it just looks too clean, it looks too nice. So I want a bit of grain and a bit of...
You want a bit of grit.
Yeah, I want a bit of grime to it, you know. So it feels like you're watching something that someone saved all their pennies for, and they've been buying film stock as they go along to do stuff, and they can only do one take of everything because if they have to do more than one take, it costs some money. So, yeah, I like that. That's why I'm such a big fan of, like, the 70s and 80s low-budget stuff. But saying that, Bullets for the Dead's got some nice concepts in it, and I hope that the people that make it go on to make some more stuff because they've obviously learned a lot doing this. It's, like I say, good fun if you see it out there, if you see it via the streaming sites, etc. Especially on Monster, have got their own on-demand site online. It's worth just sitting back and just chilling out, get some popcorn, get some chocolate, and just go, all right, and we'll watch Cowboys versus Zombies.
Alex, it's funny that you should mention, you know, saving up film stock, because it's funny that this is a Queensland shot film, and another Queensland, well-known Queensland brothers, the Spierig brothers, pretty much did that for their first feature. My understanding is that for Undead, they pretty much saved up any bits of film roles that they had lying around, and that's how they put together that film. And they didn't even know if they developed some of it, whether it would actually come out or not, because the film roles were, they'd just been collecting for ages.
I've got to go back and rewatch Undead, because when I originally saw it, I wasn't that into it, but I've liked everything they've done since. So again, it's like with Bullets for the Dead, if the people who've made this can do what the brothers did with Undead and then go on and make that jump and make something like Daybreakers.
Daybreakers
was great. And I really love Predestination. They just ramped it up again for their next movie. So I'm looking forward to what they do for next time. It's like, I see these films as a big learning curve for filmmakers. They go, right, we're making a horror movie. Horror movies are supposedly easy. There's a market for them. People will watch them regardless of the quality. It's got to have something in there that people will latch onto. And Bullets for the Dead has got that. You can just kind of relax into it and go, yeah, there's some cool ideas here. I'll do it. Enjoy this, but their next film will be a couple of steps up. I see it's a nice platform for these guys to launch from.
Well, Alex, if you're of a certain age in Australia in particular, you would probably remember a TV series called Monkey Magic, which was based on the classic novel Journey to the West. But this Hong Kong Chinese fantasy takes the Monkey King to a whole new level. Alex, I'm a massive fan of Monkey Magic, and this film, Monkey King 2, looks a lot less cheesy than the TV series I grew up with and looks like it's definitely a contender.
Oh, see, now, again, I was a huge fan. It was just called Monkey in the UK, and I was a huge fan of it, and I've watched a lot of the Monkey movies, the original Shaw Brothers ones, which the Japanese series was based on, are really good fun, and the TV show. Excellent. Now, there's been a lot of Monkey movies over the years, and they've been pretty dodgy in places. Whereas this month, you know, and I always look forward to a new Monkey movie and thinking, right, okay, this time they've got to do something good. And this is Monkey King 2. I mean, Monkey King is the story of our Monkey King becoming immortal, going to heaven, causing a ruckus, getting put under the mountain. And this is the second part of the Monkey story, which is the Journey to the West, where he gets found under the mountain by the priest who's going to retrieve the scriptures from India and bring them back to China. This is pretty epic looking. It's great. It's possibly my favorite Monkey movie I've seen in the past 10, 15 years, maybe, since the whole Monkey Magic TV show. It's got a really good cast. They don't refer to the characters as Monkey, Pigsy, or Sandy. The priest isn't called Tripitaka. They've got their original Chinese names. The CGI and the effects are incredible. The baddies are great. It's got all the elements of the TV show, but with far superior action sequences and actually people that can do martial arts rather than people just twiddling a stick around and running around and actually doing. If you watch Monkey Magic now, the fight sequences are quite dreadful. Brilliant, but dreadful.
Come on now. Come on.
Oh.
I always just wanted a cloud to come down and get me, and I saw a stage version of this not so long ago, Alex, and the thing that disappointed me the most, it was amazing, it was brilliant, it used parkour artists, it was fantastic, but the thing that let me down was they didn't even try to incorporate the cloud.
Oh, that's just, my brother had a Monkey Magic wedding and I went as Sandy. He was Monkey and his wife Fiona was a heavenly peach maiden. My brother arrived on a cloud.
Oh, that's so cool.
Well, it was a skateboard with stuff stapled to it. But
it doesn't matter.
Was a cloud. It doesn't matter. It was a cloud. He had the full monkey outfit and the headband, and their wedding rings are in the shape of the headband and stuff. He's a big monkey fan. So, yeah, it's like, I would recommend this movie to my brother, being such a huge monkey fan. And anyone who's a monkey fan, it's great. Thoroughly enjoyed this. I've read somewhere that this is the middle of a trilogy, so I'm looking forward to the third one, and I've got to go back and watch the first one now as well, because I've come in at the middle of this. But yeah, if you're familiar with the monkey story, then you'll recognize all the elements in this. I mean, he is belligerent, he's mischievous, he's arrogant, and you know, it's the story of how those emotions with him within the Monkey King are tamed and focused.
My grandfather was a wood turner. My late grandfather was a wood turner, Alex, and he made my brother was obsessed with monkey magic, missed it the first time, caught it the second time, and my late grandfather made him a monkey stick, which he then regretted making when my brother kept hitting himself with it by accident while trying to spin it around. And, you know, my sister and I got taken out a number of times. It caused so many issues. And I think the monkey stick was in lockdown more than monkey actually was.
It's not the easiest thing in the world to learn staff.
No.
Yeah, especially if you've made it out of something that isn't rattan, because rattan's quite light, and if you hit yourself with it, you're not going to knock yourself out. If you've made it out of a big solid lump of wood, it's going to clonk you really hard.
Well, Alex, we go now from monkey to a strange life form which consumes everything in its path as it grows and grows.
If it had a mind, you could reason with it. If it had a face, you could look it in the eye. If it had a body, you could shoot it. Now, man is no longer the supreme being on this planet.
The organism is growing at a geometric rate.
The blob. Terror has no shape.
Alex, another case of where, like Killer Clowns from Outer Space, the young people of the town are trying to let the townsfolk know that something's going on, but of course they're not listened to.
Oh, of course not. These are teenagers. Why would adults listen to teenagers? Very silly. It's a small town. Teenagers know nothing. This is the 1988 remake of The Blob from umbrellaent.com.au in all its glorious high-def glory on Blu-ray and, of course, on DVD. And this is somewhat overlooked when it comes to discussions on remakes, which is a shame because it's fantastic.
It takes it to a whole new level from the original.
Oh, yeah, you know, the effects and everything are great. Again, I would have seen this when it came out in the 80s and would have just dismissed it as a schlocky horror movie and stuff. And re-watching it just made me appreciate just how well done this was. I mean, this is directed by Chuck Russell, who did A Nightmare on Elm Street 3 before this, which seems to be everyone's favourite Nightmare on Elm Street sequel, and for good reason. And he co-wrote that, and he co-wrote this with Frank Darabont, who went on to do The Mist and bring The Walking Dead to TV. So you've got these two people who've already done one really cool sequel, have got together to do a really cool remake. And it really shows that they're real fans of horror. The script is cool. The characters are great. Our hero is a mullet-wearing, leather jacket-sporting, motorbike-riding, boot-wearing, authority-hating teen who repairs his clothes with gaffer tape. He's just the embodiment of every teen that grows up in a small town that just wants to kind of get out but hasn't really managed to do it yet. And of course, he's the only one who can save the place because he's the only one willing to take risks. His kind of girlfriend, female lead in it, is really cool as well. She's a really good character. She's not a rubbish female lead, which you tended to get in a lot of horror movies. And yeah, they just do their best to alert the town and to fight the blob. The effects for the blob are amazing. They're great. You couldn't really do a lot better with CGI now. Whoever thought up how to make this thing grow and expand was a genius. There's a few blue green screen moments in it that you can spot, but you know that adds to it, that dates it nicely. All the grue and the gore is brilliant. It's some of it's quite slapstick, some of it's quite foul, which is again great. The scene in the cinema is brilliant. Yeah, it looks great. If you can find the limited edition, the special release of this, it comes with the original Blob and the Son of the Blob, which is the sequel to the original, on the two disc Blu-ray.
Oh, how so great.
Yeah, yeah. There's only 2,500 of those pressed up, so you've got to go out there and find it. But yeah, I can't praise this enough. It was so much fun to rewatch.
And Alex, there's nothing like a bit of rock salt when you are doing a film about the blob if you just need to create a bit of sort of crystallized blob towards the end of a movie.
No spoilers. Come on.
I don't think I gave too much away. Nah. It's a blob. It does blobby things.
if you've been watching horror movies from the 80s, you will spot tons of people in this cast who've appeared in other great movies along the way. I was sitting there kind of watching it going, oh, he's from RoboCop. Cool. I didn't think he was in it. I've never seen him in anything else. And you just sit there and you can spot people from all over the place. But like I said, it's when a time when people were passionate about doing really cool scripts and stuff for movies. It's utterly predictable, but it's such a nice ride. It's like being on a fairground run. You go, I know what this is going to do. This is going to go up. This is going to go. This is going to go fast. It's going to throw me to the side, to the other side. At the end, they're not going to get off and go, that was great. And it's exactly what this does.
Well, Alex, what is Festen, which I think is translated to the celebration, all about?
This is a Danish show, again, from umbrellaent.com.au. This is an amazing, incredibly bleak Danish movie. This will not be for everyone's taste. This is about a family party where the father's 60. He's very, very rich. The party's in this huge house. All the siblings have gathered, all the relatives. There's tons of people there. It's filmed in the Dogme 95 style, so there's no post-production. It's unedited sound, so it's whatever the mic picks up is what's on the tape. There's no additional lighting. It's all natural. All the performances are amazing in this. It's about a family on the verge of disintegration. All the siblings have come to the party with their respective others and their families and stuff. The family holds a dark secret, and it looks like it's about to be exposed by one of the sons, and the rest of the brothers and sisters are trying to stop him from doing this because they know if it gets out, they're all out of the will. And they endured what they endured because they knew when daddy dies, they should get a bucket full of money. And if something happens and people find out what dad did, then that's it. No one's getting anything. So there's this dilemma of like, do they allow their past to be told or do they keep it secret so they can have a better future for themselves? It is quite an incredible film. First time I saw this was late at night on TV in the UK. I was just utterly transfixed. Again, it's lost none of its power all these years later. This came out in 1998 and won a heap of prizes when it came out for best films and stuff. So this is part of Umbrella's world classics, and it most definitely is a world classic. If you want something that you're not going to watch repeatedly, but you want to dig out every now and again just to make sure your life is much better than that in the movie, then yeah, this is one of those movies. It's quite outstanding, but it's not an everyday watch. It's nothing you're going to get out and go, oh, you know what? I want to watch Festen
it's
again.
It's a rainy day. Let's just whack on a bit of Festen.
Yeah. This was made into a stage play at one point as well. I can't believe anything more distressing than going to see this as a stage play. You know, it's like the theatre is something completely different to the cinema. I've seen Clockwork Orange done by the Royal Shakespeare Company, and I came out of Clockwork Orange going, that was fantastic. I can't imagine going to see this as a stage play and coming out and going, whoa, brilliant, let's go out now. You just go, I just need to go home and just hug everybody. If you want something that's going to challenge you and make you sit there and watch it and feel uncomfortable about life, then, yeah, watch Festen. If you want just jolly, steer clear of it. You know. But, yeah, one of those movies that you watch it once and it will stay with you forever.
Well, apparently the director was inspired to make his first film from a talkback caller to Danish national radio, as you do, who told this unusual speech about his stepfather's 60th birthday. Then apparently, so that was in 1996. Then in 2002, apparently, they found Alan, in inverted commas again, who got to meet the director. And then when he was talking to him, he said the story was pure fantasy, but that he had taken it from the real life experience of a Danish nurse. So, you know, there's a little bit of life influencing art here. Even if Alan, in inverted commas, might have lied.
Yeah. Well, regardless of the inspiration for Festen, I'm glad that it got made because, yeah, it's one of those movies that you will get if you're into this sort of stuff, and it will sit on your shelf until the time that you feel mentally comfortable to watch it, and then you'll just go, right, okay, I'll think I'll watch something like Dead Ringers just to lighten the mood.
Well, Alex, your last new release is 10 Filmmakers and One Night of Horror.
So yeah, again, umbrellaent.com.au have released Night of Horror Volume 1, so hopefully this means there'll be Volume 2. Now, I'm a bit of a sucker for anthology films. Going back to the old Amicus films, who were the rival to Hammer, and they did a couple of really nice anthology movies, through Creepshow, which I adore from the moment I watched it, through stuff like Cat's Eyes and Latter Days, the ABCs of Death and the VHS movies. This sits nice, really comfortably with the best of them. And as you said, 10 short movies, varying subjects. You got zombies, demonic possession, self-surgery. There's not a duff one in it, which is really nice to see. They've put together 10 short films, and they're all great. They're all good and creepy, and they've got their own little take on what they think is terrifying and scary and dark and stuff. There's little bits of humour in some of them. Some of them are dead straight. Yeah, really, really nice. The only thing that I wasn't totally taken on is they got some girl in a singlet with a bad stick-on scorpion tattoo on her cheek wandering through a warehouse, looking at stuff which is supposed to link all the movies together. Not sure that works. I'd much rather just have the titles come up as one ended and one began, the titles come up of the name of the film, and it just went into it. The kind of linking stuff together wasn't too fussed by, but the short films themselves, yeah, all great. Yeah, I'm thoroughly impressed by all the makers here.
Alex, always a pleasure.
No problem. And again, all the trailers for all of these will be up on the True Cult Facebook, which is facebook.com/TrueCultMovies.